Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Big Boat interview. I'm Caroline White, Deputy Editor of Boat International, and I'm here to introduce you to an amazing project that was revealed earlier this year at the Boat International Design Festival in Cortina by Marnix Hoekstra, co-director of Dutch superyacht design studio Vrijpak. Vrijpak is helmed by the talented and charming duo Bart Bouwhuis and the aforementioned Marnix Hoekstra. Their studio boasts more than 7,500 projects in its portfolio, including the glamorous and multi-award-winning 55-metre Alia Al-Wab and the 45-metre Explorer in Disguise Latitude. Their credentials are serious, but their approach is fresh, out of the box, endlessly curious and inventive. They're also genuinely committed to sustainability in yachting. They even have a green manifesto. So Vrijpak was the perfect studio to partner with an organisation called Foundation Zero, a group of impact investors committed to creating sustainability in the marine sphere. Their task, called Project Zero, is incredibly ambitious, to build a 69-metre zero fossil fuel sailing yacht. We're talking no engine room. This is far more than a standard yacht project, with physicists and IT experts part of the team and genuinely groundbreaking science and engineering being achieved. Their findings will be open source so that others can benefit from their discoveries. So far, so fantastical, you might think. Well, the keel is actually laid at Vitters and work is in full swing. Back in Cortina, Marnix took to the stage to give us the exclusive lowdown on this truly extraordinary project. We're now able to share it with our podcast audience, and I hope you enjoy it.
Probably first the question is, who's Foundation Zero? Foundation Zero is a group of impact investors, many of whom are really accustomed to yachting, who have gathered together data analysts, scientists, physicists, naval architects, designers, in achieving their, trying to achieve their goal, which is sustainable marine travel and other hospitality solutions. So that's who. And then what are we doing on this? It's about 3.5 years ago now, they've invited us to join this multidisciplinary team to create, indeed, like Shirley just announced, a zero fossil fuel yacht. And it was quite clear that that asked for groundbreaking innovations. It's quickly to be answered, it's impossible. But as you will see today, we've managed, and as you can see from the teaser, we've actually laid keel, and Vitter Shipyard hopes to launch the vessel somewhere in 2025. So that's a bit already on the what, and then obviously you have the how. So the how is indeed by making all these little groundbreaking innovations to make this revolutionary vessel actually possible. And these innovations I started to call sometimes more bleeding edge than leading edge, actually, as some, as you will see today, are far out there. As we call it, big, hairy, audacious goals. What are the three goals of this foundation? What are they trying to achieve? Now, as their impact investors, they have decided to make their impact by actually sharing all their knowledge. That, for me, already was really, really mind-blowingly good, because as we're all accustomed to, most of our projects are secretive until they leave the shed, and then even, you know, media is flying with drones to catch a glimpse of the project, but this project is different. They want to share all the learnings, all the findings, all the data, all the software we're creating for this boat, all the management of the boat in an open source format, because it's their idea that all should benefit from the financial commitment they're making to make this happen. As already said, second BHAG, the big heritage goal, is zero fossil fuel. And that really got my attention in the beginning, because that primes you to do things really different. So quite quickly, I also introduced the idea that we will not have any internal combustion engine on the boat. If we have the goal that we're not going to burn fuel, why would we install an internal combustion engine? Not even one hidden in a corner of the boat, and we'll call it a range extender or something like that. Just nothing. No fuel tanks, nothing. Because that sets the stage for really to think different. And then last but not least, uncompromised on aesthetics, because personally, I also think that will be the winner for the future. We can all here invent a lot of beautiful technical solutions, but if they don't appeal to the mind and the soul, and they don't look beautiful, why would our owners of the future, and current owners apparently, already buy them? So it has to look good. And we can all debate whether it does or does not, if you like a Tesla or you don't like a Tesla, but it has to look good. So setting that from the foundation and their goals, a little insight possibly in our own internal belief and why we got drawn to this project. We believe that sustainability is just this what's on the screen. It's a massive design opportunity. We believe that we as designers, with, so to say, our pencils, can lead this sustainability revolution, because even if clients don't ask for it, we can design the solutions in our designs. And if we do it well, and we research it well, as you'll see today, and we come with ground, very factual papers, research work, and data, we will find shipyards who are absolutely willing and can build this, still with a high risk, but actually can build this. And that's all, I think, very much up to all of us here in the audience. Now, I'm going to share with you, because it's open source, I think three in total, let's say, design processes which we follow internally. So kind of our little trade secrets. But as we're part of this project, I think we should share them. So first off, I'll talk a bit about this human-centered design, and then about two leading questions which we always have in our design process. Many of you might know this, human-centered design. But particularly IDEO made it very, very big, but it's originally studied by Stanford University. You can find the papers online. If you Google this, Stanford University 58, you'll find them. And it's a very interesting process, because it sets the end user of your product as the central person of your process. So instead of me trying to draw just a beautiful boat, I'm first looking at, okay, how can I emphasize with this client? I can interview this client. I can learn from their crew, which we've done. We've went back to our own fleet. We went back to the fleet of the investors and said, okay, how is your day running? What are you doing? What's the problems? What's good on this boat? What's bad on this boat? What would you like to improve? And we kind of also, as you will see, interviewed the boat. We created data loggers, which we installed of the boat, with lots of sensors throughout the boat. And we tried to see if the data matched the findings of the crew. Is laundry actually running 24/7? And what kind of energy does the laundry then use? All these kind of things. It's kind of an interview. Then you define, you set your design brief, you ideate, you sketch, you scramble. And that is another crucial point, which you'll also see today. You start to prototype. Now, by now, in our office, we actually have kind of a makerspace with two 3D printers, another one coming soon, laser cutters, everything. Just even if you do it with scissors and papers, to see if it works on scale, could even be one-on-one, the thing you're trying to create. This is a big advantage of human-centered design. You test this, and if it all goes well, you go back and do the process. One of the two questions I want to share with you today, which we use a lot, is the so-called why five times principle, originated from Dr. Toyoda, who used it in his Kaizen principle for the Toyota production system. And asking why five times, but particularly listening to the question, to the answers of that, really helps you to get to the root cause of the problem you're trying to solve. I have some practical examples later on how it helped us take steps forward when we were stuck. And finally, another question is the so-called how might we questions. This really I could find originating back to IDEO as well. And the how might we is actually a beautiful question, because you cannot answer it with no, it's never been done before, it's impossible. How might we kind of makes you lean forward and step forward, like, okay, how might I solve this problem? What might be a solution for this problem? How crazy it might ever be. So we got a foundation, we got goals, we got a crazy studio who has some ideas. We need a team. It was very obvious we need a big team and a broad team, way bigger than our own company could ever sustain and had to sustain. So if placed on the screen, let's say all the elements which you find in a normal design team. So you got project managers, you got financial people, you got construction control, you got lawyers, everybody's there. But in white, I think is interesting to see who's more in our team. We got physicists in our team, data analysis, coders from day one. We're writing code, we're writing software to learn from our prototypes. We got technical writers, because we want to present all this to you, so we must make technical reports. battery specialist, prototyping, as I said before, which is a lot happening by Fitter Shipyard, which is super new for them as well. Then we got route prediction, weather prediction, because can we actually sail this boat across the ocean, which was led by Dijkstra Naval Architects. Hydro generation, and then on our side, on the very bottom, okay, it's cool, we can do some exterior, interior design of this beautiful boat, but we're also thermodynamic modeling the boat. We're coming up with energy and solar solutions, something really different than you will have in your normal team. But all this is super important. It's about the mindset of the questions and the process, and it's about the skill set of the people with that mindset. So leading on from there, let's dive in a little bit deeper into, let's say, the central aspect of the boat, which is sailing without fossil fuel. Starting off in a lot of the early conversations, Bob the physicist always brought back the first law of conservation of energy, which you kind of all knew. You probably had it in high school. I also knew, but I also forgot about it. It's been very critical and crucial to think about it every time that there are so much variations and forms of energy that it's more down to your own imagination how you harvest and grab and store it rather than that there's no other chance than to use fossil fuel. So with that in the back of our minds, we had to start looking at the boat. We only have the sun, the wind, and the water, like Kees-Jan said in the teaser as well. That's what we have. We have natural elements all given to us, and we have plenty of it. There's more than enough solar hitting the surface of the Earth to support all energy we want. However, we also must have it hitting the boat, capturing from the boat. So we've done prototyping with sticking solar panels on the mast, the biminis, the decks, everywhere. And let's see what happens if we go from Gibraltar to Auckland. Let's study this. Let's analyze what's happening. How's the sun hitting it? Are the sails actually covering it or not? What happens if we install a winch on the back of the boat and we fly a big kite on the back of the boat to actually harvest electrical energy? Because those winches are electrical. You can use them, of course, to put in sails, but you can also use them to pull out a kite. The kite was about 90 square meters to actually make energy. Hydro generation, of course, big part of this, already a little bit known, but the hydro generation Dijkstra Naval Architects brought out with forward-facing props and a third quadrant propeller by itself is already mind-boggling and never been done in this industry. Boiling that further down, we've actually mapped it in four different sections: harvesting, storing, management and saving. And underneath that, as you can see from this very big list, is a lot of research to be done. It didn't take us this long for nothing. Going deeper in those elements, you also must know the actual operational profile of your boat, like I'm sure many of you have done before. We, however, got this operational profile from the data boxes again. So we just took the data. We didn't, in a way, believe the human beings on board. They always have a personal interest, of course, and the data doesn't lie. And started to look at the green fields, what could we yield against, what do we use? And can we get this in balance, obviously? So from that, studying the energy balance. Nothing really new so far, I guess. This is one of the pie diagrams of a sheet we've done when we were tracking a two-week charter mode, as this is our goal. We want to fully sustain 2 weeks of full luxury charter without any external charging of the boat. And not in this graph, as many of you will have noticed, is propulsion, as obviously propulsion is a major factor of energy consumption. But as you can also see, something we kind of already knew, that nearly half of everything is related to air condition. Most importantly, what we found here is that we could sustain the boat at this time for only 48 hours, 2 days. We really hit a big brick wall when these outcomes came from all our studies. So we went back to our process. Let's check out why we can't achieve this. So, as an example, why can we only operate the yacht for 2 days instead of 14? Well, obvious question, obvious answer, we drain our battery. You know, and that battery is already 5 megawatt hours. At the time, I'm not sure if it's still current, but at the time, nothing had been installed to that size and dimension on any other yacht before. So apparently substantial size, but 2 days. So even if we would slightly improve on this, 10%, 20%, we're not nowhere near our 14 days, which could be a very obvious answer to this first why question. Like, oh, just make a bigger battery pack. Just put more fuel in the boat and you'll cross. So we dive deeper. Why can we only store 5 megawatt hour? Well, obvious answer perhaps, but there's available space, there's energy density of the batteries. It's like, this is it. We could potentially 5.5, but this is kind of where we are. So let's dig deeper. Why do we actually use all this energy? Well, we have to sustain all these air conditioning heat loads because, yeah, we're converting from electrical back to the battery, from the battery back to the chiller plant, and making cold air. Okay, so why do we convert? You can now see slowly how annoying it is. Like when your kids are in the back seat, why is this, why is this, why is this? But when your team does it, you'll start to appreciate it. And then we went into the luxury hotel load. Well, clearly, HVAC, but also shower, laundry. There's a lot which we need to convert, which we're converting electrical energy back to heat. So this is really when the physicist stepped in and said, okay, we gotta ask ourselves, why are we only looking at electrical energy as the only form of energy? There are so many other forms. Remember the first law of conservation. Back to the balance sheet. Let's separate things which are thermal from electrical. So we got water, we got washing, drying, dishwasher, way beyond 50%. There is just not enough electrical power on the boats to sustain these heat loads or cold loads, doesn't really matter, these thermal balance. So yeah, like I'm sure this has been clear from the speech right now to you, like it happened to us, it's like, okay, we have to focus on a whole nother level here. We got to focus on heat instead of electrical. So from there, back into our process. Super important learning. Heat is extremely relevant. And as far as I'm concerned, if this is the only takeaway from the speech today, that's perfectly fine. We went into a whole field of how might we questions to start to learn more about heat. We're a naval architecture firm, other people in the group are, but we've got physicists, we've got data analysis, we can learn more about this. So back into the process, let's start prototyping, let's start modeling. Turns out, if you go to land-based architecture, and particularly for swimming pools, there is heat modeling software. Kind of makes sense when I found it out, because swimming pools obviously heat up, they cool up, you want to get them at the right temperature, you got to model this. So there's software available for that. Actually, the very first plugins we use are just plugins for Rhino. It's called the box. It's called, if you Google it, there's a whole set, whole plugins on Rhino where you can start experimenting with modeling this. It's a software we all kind of use. So much like CFD optimization, you can use the modeling tool to start to learn about how does heat transfer through the boat. So I thought it would be good to give you two like really practical examples, which we are introducing on the boat. First off, the decks obviously heat up, that's clear. We got a lot of sun coming to the decks. We have a blue water boat. Client doesn't want to go very hard, high south or deep south or high north. So we got a lot of heat on the boat. In general, currently, a deck will be made of, let's say, a metal by in gross terms, composite, will be probably applied with some kind of filler to level it out to actually get the decking on top. By continuously modeling and improving our system, we found out that if you level the deck with cork, a natural material, readily available, sustainable, cradle to cradle, and we're going to do 30 mil cork on that, put the deck on top of that, and you increase the insulation over the frames, and particularly over the bars below, which suffer often a lot from low insulation, we could get a 30 to 35% less heat transfer in the boat, which has an immediate effect on our air conditioning system, obviously, because we're not loading the boat with all this heat, we don't have to cool it. Something you can design on your boats tomorrow. Companies available who can do this or who are doing this on boats already, just not with this ID in mind. The cool thing which we also found here is that the cork actually has a very high absorption for vibration. So when the crew is operating the boat and you're still sleeping or you're in your quarters, you actually have a big dampening effect of that. So happy accident. Second example, because also the topsides obviously heat up, it's like, okay, how might we reduce the heat load of these topsides? we're going back to the laboratories of paint suppliers, and turns out they're experimenting with heat-reflective paint. So heat-reflective paint is a paint where you can, as you can see here from the prototypes on top of Fitter Shipyard roof, visually we don't notice the difference between these panels. If I would have them here on the stage, you would say they're all the same. It's because the heat reflection goes on another spectrum of the infrared the sun is displaying on the Earth. It's handy to have a physicist on board, so he can explain that to you. So if you put a heat gun on that, you can experiment with how much can we actually reduce the heat. And zooming in on that, we found that with heat reflective paint, the one we're currently testing is from Jotun, we can get a 30% decrease of heat transfer. Interesting note here is that the color of your filler and primer actually matters to get less heat load on the top sides. So that was a bit on saving, some things we found on that side. But then, obviously, if heat's interesting, we should harvest it. How might we harvest heat? How can we actually do that? This is a question which took really a while. It's easy to talk about it now, really a while to answer, because in principle, fossil fuel is a beautiful energy carrier. As many of you will know, you get like 35, 40% efficiency out of a liter of fuel. So yeah, that's actually pretty good. A solar panel is, in general, 20, 21, 22% efficient. So there's already half from fossil fuel. Obviously, it's solar, but still, it is. Then we're doing hydro generation, we're doing wind generation. But that turns out, on the predictions from the Dijkstra software, to be less reliable, because there's not always wind, and sometimes you need energy. However, we've also noted during the test we've done with the Biminis filled with solar panels, which when they went to Auckland, that you could not sit underneath these Biminis. It would just be too hot. So even if you would have a light breeze, the radiation of heat from the panels through the cloth of the Bimini would be too much to bear. So that's interesting. So we have all this heat. We can look at in how we can harvest this. I'll go into the way we do it now, but I'll give you a little spoiler alert. This is actually way more easier on motorboats, which is the predominant part of the market as we've seen this morning. Because all motorboats for a time to come will have some form of combustion engine, even if we use different fuels. So we have a massive amount of heat available. So if you would have, a 500 Drosten vessel with auxiliary power and engines installed, you easily have 5 megawatt hour per day available as heat, just as a source there. You have it. You don't have to go through all these difficulties. But this also starts to become fun, as you can tell from me, so we'll continue on this. Where we ended up, which is currently also still in prototyping, is to create what we've called a hybrid solar panel. So we've used, although we built them ourselves, it's custom solar panel from custom diodes, but it's a pretty standard solar panel, which you could also just buy. We pour a silicon surface, a channeled silicon surface over it, and through the channels is running a cooling liquid. And the cooling liquid obviously then takes away the heat of the panel, which is very interesting because also the efficiency of the panel actually is more is enhanced because of that, because the panel is cooler, it yields more electrical energy. And with this, we're getting, we did prototype testing over 6 months last year, even in Holland, we're getting up to 63% efficiency of this panel. So we're going from 20 to 60, which is massive, which is huge. So ultimately, we'll have about a near 100 square meters of these panels on the boat. And because we don't need an extreme amount of them, we were able to hide them in the top of the Biminis. I'll have a picture later on. So actually, they're still also hidden in plain sight, so we don't forget about that the boat also has to look beautiful. Now that we have harvested all this heat, where do we store all this heat? Next point. Again, going outside of our little yachting bubble, no matter how much I love it, land-based architecture is already using phase-changing materials and so-called thermal batteries. Batteries which you can much compare like an electrical battery, you can charge and discharge them time and time again, actually more often than an electrical battery. and which all makes use of natural materials. So in our case, we're now prototyping with two types of salt, a canister, literally a canister filled with salt and tubes running around them. We're heating up the salt. It then melts, so it goes into another phase, much like water freezes and can melt again. But it takes a long time before it becomes solid again. It's now just beyond 24 hours. We're aiming for 48 hours because we want to be able to have an overcast day and not be without any thermal energy. And it's about a 90 degrees heat inside of this battery. And if you want to, let's say, visualize it, it's much like a day tank of a 500 gross ton boat. It's substantial, but it's not too big that you can't install it. So, yeah, what's the result so far? As you can tell, probably we went in deep and we had many of these unexpected encounters. We failed a lot, which in our book is that we're learning a lot. And we trust the process and continue to go forward. Although we've laid the keel, we're building the boat, we have yet to find out really some crucial points of the energy part, but we know we will get there before the boat launches. We took about, I think now it will be something like 50,000 man hours of research and development. We've encountered beautiful other people in other industries with unorthodox ideas as well, where we can team up with, which is very fresh, refreshing to do as well. And going back to our original goals, last November launched the website foundationzero.org. It will be the open source platform where all white papers and documents will be published, which you can visit already right now. Second one is, can we build a boat with fossil fuel? We believe we can. We actually laid the keel of her last September. And finally, I think we found a way to make a classic worthy of her time. As you can see from this little snapshot where you have the hybrid solar panels in the integrated Bimini. But we got the windscreen of structural glass. We got beautiful untreated wood, which is it's a sustainable wood. So there's nothing teak in this image. A very beautiful classic spoonbow, 70 meter Panamax catch, which will hopefully in 2025 or perhaps a year later sail the seven seas. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much for sharing, and what great energy you have for this project. It's infectious, which it needs to be. I have a question before we open it up. The timeline is ambitious. You're hoping to float in 2 years' time. When you look at the project as a whole, what's the biggest area of concern? What are you worried about on that timeline?
The energy part, particularly the energy part. And the time was not big enough to go into the whole way we're going to solve the air conditioning of it, because the air conditioning is actually the biggest consumer. And we're going to do that with a specific breed of chillers, so not conventional marine chillers, but also land-based chillers. But that is on the prototype now, because the land-based chillers don't like to be like this. So we have this cardanic setup at the shipyard where we're testing them, and they fail. Because the way they do it, it's called an absorption chiller, if you want to Google that. Is that, yeah, they can't really heal much. It's much like a fridge, so to say. So we have to find a solution for a healing chiller currently.
Sailing boats. It's a bit of a design flaw, isn't it, that they heal over. Ladies and gentlemen, do we have any questions?
Just a quick question for you. So just to understand what you're designing there, there's no fuel tanks on board, no provisions for any potential backup system if it fails?
Nothing.
Cool.
Lloyds did think different about that, by the way. So it's interesting because it made our, we don't have an engine room, so we got into a whole new set of discussions with class, clearly, because yeah, do we then need to comply with fire regulations for an engine room because we don't have an engine room? It did make the mast become a primary means of propulsion, which is a whole new set of trouble, so to say. But it makes sense to me.
Marnix, thanks so much for this. Are these hybrid panels, are these going to be commercially available? Are you guys the first to have thought of this, or is this something that's already out there? Because it sounds, to go from 20% to 60% sounds like magic.
Yeah, Yeah, if we didn't do the prototypes, we all thought it would be, but the data shows. So yeah, and like I said, it's in Holland, so it's not even the, you know, the sunniest place on Earth, unfortunately. So the whole idea comes back to the open source. So what the client really wants is that we all talk about this, we publish it, so it cannot be patented, and then he hopes a company grabs it and makes it available. So there's not a plan that Fitters becomes a hybrid solar panel company, but we are talking, let's say, to the solar diode suppliers, like, hey, why wouldn't you, you know, make this commercially available? So the whole idea is that through their impact, this will be commercially available, and these companies don't have to do that research, but can start making money straight away, so it actually happens. Because a lot of these things fail because the little startups don't have the capital to actually all prototype and test this, although they might have the ideas.
So when do you put these panels on the roof of your home?
They're currently slightly expensive, I will be honest, yeah. But I didn't put solar panels yet on my roof, I will be honest, because I thought, I'm going to wait another year. Maybe there are a couple of leftovers.
I have a question. In your presentation, on one hand, you were focusing on trying not to get the heat energy load into the yacht. And on the other hand, you were trying to harvest it on other places. So there's like this contradiction. On the decks, you want to keep the interior as cool as possible,
yeah.
But then you're introducing another element to collect the heat.
Yeah,
I'm curious how that thought process went behind yeah. that.
Well, this is obviously like in 30 minutes a snapshot. So the very original idea is that in the cork we would have pipes, much like your floor heating pipes, running on the whole boat. So we would harvest it directly from the deck. But yeah, those of you who've seen 70 meter sailboat decks. And I was surprised. If you look on top of that, there's it's only holes. There's no deck. No. So it's only, you know, it's only hatches. It's only escape hatches, whatever. It's winches. There's not enough surface. So we went the opposite. We said, okay, we got to focus on a certain amount of areas, which we say specifically will, let's say, we even worked on prisms, like should we direct even more sunlight into this area so we can really harvest it from this area. And the rest of it, we just want to keep cool because it wasn't viable to do it. Yeah, very good question.
Any more?
Congratulations, first of all, very nice. And are you also considering an energy saving approach to the building process of the vessel, not just the cruising? Like, I don't know, putting solar panels or using hydrogen to fill up the energy tanks of the shipyard itself when yeah. you're actually building.
Yeah, also a very good question. It has been a lot of debate also on the use of the building materials themselves. This is really up to the group of impact investors, and they've said if we also must, let's say, reinvent the shipyard as a fact, which would be merit, this would take too long. Our solution will not come to the market quick enough. So they deliberately said, like, it's for somebody else to see, can we use another type of building material? And it's for somebody else to see, like, can I construct this vessel in a more efficient manner? We're going to focus on this. So yeah, that's what happened.
A question.
Just a comment that I think these sort of projects are absolutely sort of fundamental to yachting moving forwards, and you know, it gets us out of just tweaking and slight evolution into a real energy revolution, you know. And it takes a huge, huge effort, huge investment to and a huge leap of faith to jump into a project like this. And I think it's absolutely terrific. And when the boat comes out, I think there's no doubt, you know, it'll be a game changer. And if you make it 100% zero, terrific. If you make it then 98-95%, it's still totally, you know, alternative to anything that is, you know, on the water afloat now and probably in build or even sort of on people's paperwork at the moment. So I think just congratulations. It's a terrific thing you're doing.
Well said. A final question.
Marnix, great presentation. And a question. The biggest surface we look at are the sails. How what happened there? Because you certainly looked at that.
Yeah, like the decks, also has been a research project. There's actually already a market out there for solar sails, so to say. What we found is that the surface actually is not, again, as big as you believe once you dig into the operational profile. These high-end boats do reef quite substantially because there's a great amount of power on the rig and the sails. So it means that the whole lower side of everything you can't actually use as a predictable means of harvesting. But the main reason why it failed is that all these projects which are out there currently, they have a big, big problem with making all the connections of the sails every single time work. Because the sails go in and out, they fail too quick. So we discarded that part of the project because we found the way into the thermal energy, which actually has a lots more joules to deliver. But we've looked at it, and also again, all these failures will also be published because for somebody else it could actually be a solution. And we've looked at sun awnings with to have these solar panels, and that's actually a very interesting research we've done as well with Southern Spars. Yeah.
Marnix, it's been fantastic. Well done taking this project on. And I hope you come back next year and update us on everything that you've learned so far. Cool. Ladies and gentlemen, Marnix.
Thank you for listening to this week's Big Boat interview, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.